So tonight's topic is chaga again, round two. So previously we explored chaga together in one sense of the word, one sense of the word as relinquishment, offering up as a sacred offering, letting go. And we explore that together. As I mentioned, another way this is this word, chaga, this beautiful word is translated, is generosity. Generosity. And it makes sense because when a heart lets go, it offers up. It's a generous heart. It's the act of generosity that you're letting go, you're offering up something to someone else. It's that generosity of the heart. It's that letting go of the heart that allows you to let go of something that you could keep for yourself, but you offer it up to somebody else. It's an act of generosity. I was actually sitting with this more today with these two different translations and senses of the word, and it's so interesting because it's one word with two different senses, and this is what came up for me as the way these two senses of the word really relate to each other. These two translations of the same word, and that's not just translations, but the, let's say, the two different manifestations of the same concept. So the concept of giving up, offering up, if the beneficiary of it is primarily yourself, in that if we are the primary beneficiary, of course others will benefit too, but if we're the primary beneficiary and it results in peace, freedom, and ease, and that is a relinquishment. So let me try that again. So what came up for me was that the two different senses of this word chaga, relinquishment and generosity, differ in two dimensions. One is the dimension of who is the primary beneficiary, and the second is the result. What is the result of the act? So, in the case of relinquishment, when the heart and mind let go of stuff, of belongings, of hundreds of books, the Berkeley Public Library, from let go of grudges, let go of patterns of the mind that are not beneficial to you anymore, let go of fantasies, of narratives, of stories about others, stories about yourself, ways of life that are no longer beneficial, habits. So that kind of relinquishment is an offering up that is primarily beneficial to yourself when the heart releases those things. And then there is a feeling of ease, peace, freedom that you can experience when the mind doesn't go over that story for the 100th time. Ah, gives it up, it offers it up, relinquishes it. There's a peace, there's freedom. Which, by the way, it also relates to wisdom, as we talked about, definition of wisdom. Someone who benefits themselves, benefits others, benefits themselves and others. So in this sense, it's an act of wisdom. Relinquishment becomes an act of wisdom, benefiting oneself. Now, the other sense of the word chaga as generosity, when one offers up a gift, a physical or a virtual, mental gift that benefits others, for example, a gift of time, gift of resources, gift of affection, gift of kindness, gift of consideration, benefit of doubt. When the heart offers that to others, the primary beneficiary is the other person, but it's also you, right? We also benefit from that gift in the result. The result of generosity, chaga in this sense of generosity, it results in joy, in delight, and in happiness. You see that? Do you see the parallel? I thought it was pretty cool. your mileage might vary. But I think this is the way these two senses of the word chaga, who primarily, of course, both us and others benefit from both, but who's the primary beneficiary? I know what leads into, is it peace or is it delight, joy, glow, happiness? And again, they're related to each other because joy, delight, happiness, they're preconditions for peace. And peace is the highest happiness. So along these dimensions, I think this practice is a practice of freedom, just getting to it through a slightly different pathway of the heart. So generosity. Chaga. So the word that you might have often heard in Pali referring to generosity is dana. So what is the relationship between chaga and dana? So chaga, as we have been exploring together just now, is really a quality of the heart and mind that releases, that lets go, that offers up. Where dana refers more to the actual act of giving. It's the action of generosity, of giving. So chaga is the quality of mind that inclines one towards that act of generosity. It's more the feeling of, is the letting go, is the feeling generous, is that offering up. And it's interesting because they feed to each other, chaga and dana. So throughout this talk, I will kind of go back and forth a little bit, and I want to tell you why I'll be going a little back and forth, because they're closely related, of course. And the way they're closely related is that when we cultivate chaga, generosity of the heart, non-clinging of the heart, then we become more inclined to the action of giving with kindness. It preconditions that. And then the generosity actually arises naturally, and we act with dana, with ease. So cultivating chaga gives rise to dana. However, it can also go the other way around. So when we act with generosity, when we continue to act with generosity, that slowly also cultivates the mind that becomes more and more inclined towards giving, that holds on less and less and less, because the heart and mind see the beauty and the joy of giving. It's kind of like the saying, fake it till you become it. It's not so much fake it till you make it, but it's fake it till you become it, because that's what happens. There are various psychology research studies about different aspects that when we do something, when we quote unquote fake it, after a while we become it. It becomes us. We become it. So by doing more and more acts of generosity, of dana, it basically nudges our heart more and more as a result of that dana towards chaga, not hanging on, releasing, letting go. So the two are closely related. They give rise to each other. So chaga and dana, generosity. By the way, I love that in Pali there are two different words. It's like in Eskimo where there are lots of different words for snow, because generosity is, you know, both there is the heart movement and and the action. And in English, we have one word for it, generosity, but it's nice to tease apart these two different aspects of it. Very interesting to sit with that. So, when considering generosity, we have so much to be generous about. It's not just about, it's not necessarily about money. It's also time, which is our most important resource, our attention, most precious resource we have with others. It's our affection. Patience, our patience with others, that's a huge resource, to be patient with someone. You can be generous with, say, your place in line. Huge generosity. You can be patient with letting people in front of you in traffic instead of, I'm not going to let you in front of me if it kills me. You can be generous with your knowledge, with your connections, with your presence, with your smile. There's so much we have to be generous about in this world, to give, to share. I'd like to ask you for a moment to close your eyes if they're unclosed already. And I'd like you to think about a time when you gave a gift, when you were at the giving end of a gift, a physical gift or your presence or your attention. Maybe you were just present with a friend, gave him your time. Maybe it was a phone call, or it was a gift, or maybe financial gift, anything to someone. Or something, maybe a cause. Maybe it was a gift to a cause. It was a gift of your time, volunteering. Bring to mind for a moment. Act of generosity. And also bring to mind how that felt, how that feels. Non-attachment giving, being generous. What does it feel like in the heart? What does it feel like in the mind? You can open your eyes. It's interesting. I'm curious, actually, if it's comfortable for you to just popcorn style, just say a couple of words. What came up for you? What feeling came up for you as you tapped into that?
Real happiness.
Real happiness.
Love.
Connection.
Care.
Care.
Gratitude.
Mutual benefaction, yeah.
Smile.
Say again?
Joy.
Joy.
Lightness of mind.
Thank you. So what's lovely about Dana is you don't have to take my word for it. You know, just the feeling of joy and happiness that it brings up. The Buddha says in Anguttara Nikaya 3.6.37, in this world there are three things of value for one who gives. What are these things? Before giving, the mind of the giver is happy. While giving, the mind of the giver is made peaceful. After having given, the mind of the giver is uplifted. So it's before giving, while giving, after giving. It keeps giving. before, during, after, and now with the memory of it. Also, it brightened your heart, and the giving didn't just happen just now because you're sitting here with your eyes quiet, at least for the past, I don't know, 20 minutes. So the giving happened some time ago, and yet it brought up this feeling of delight and joy and peace and ease and mutual benefaction, etc. And to know that that is available, actually reflecting on your own inner goodness, reflecting on your own generosity, is a way to gladden the mind, is a wholesome way to gladden the mind. So if you find yourself in a tight spot of difficult emotions coming up, and the mind needs to be uplifted a little bit, needs to be gladdened a little bit to get its balance back, it's perfectly wholesome to contemplate the goodness of your own heart, the kind acts. I'm not as crummy as I thought I was. The memory of the kindness, generosity uplifts the heart and allows the mind to have some balance, to then be more stable and be with whatever is arising. So I want to share a teaching with you or pass on a teaching. I learned this from Bhikkhu Nalyo, 2014, when I was sitting a retreat with him on the East Coast. And he mentioned this in the hall, and I experimented with it. So somebody asked them in the hall about yogi job, and I think that person was feeling difficulty, resistance, resentful, whatever was happening, or maybe tired, exhaustion. I'm not quite sure what the sense was, but the teaching that Bhikkhu Nalyo shared was, do your yogi job. It's your offering to the world. It's your offering. Instead of wishing you were elsewhere, do this work, do this yogi job, as if it's your offering to all the other yogis on the retreat. You're supporting them in their practice. It's your gift. It's the gift of your heart to every single person here, what you're doing. And to have this feeling, may my work be of benefit to all beings here and everywhere. This inner dimension of generosity. It was interesting. So I decided to experiment with that because so previous to that, I was doing table wiping the whole time. That was 14 days. I was the table wiper, and the time was kind of short. So I would put the food away, and I think I was underhanded. I put the food away and would wipe the tables, and I also had back pain, and also the time was kind of short. So I need to kind of get everything done in order to get to the next set, if it was important to get to the next set on time. So I know I was doing my yogi job, you know, in that mindset. It was interesting. There was no resentment, but I was just kind of doing it, getting on with it. And then after this teaching, I decided, okay, I'm going to do it as if my work is a gift to every single person who's sitting at these tables and eating. And it completely shifted it. It completely shifted the way I experienced the yogi job. Before, when I would see crumbs and, you know, pieces of food, you know, like food. Now I was like, oh, I get to clean them for the next person so that they can enjoy a clean table. Oh, my heart was uplifted and delighted imagining people sitting at the table, at the clean table that I cleaned. I made a gift of a clean table to everyone on this retreat. And it completely transformed the yogi job. And I didn't care to be on time to the sitting, because I was practicing. I was practicing wholeheartedly. I was loving my yogi job at that point. I was completely, and people would pass by, and just my whole body language, I think, changed. And the back pain that was ailing me. It wasn't a bother anymore. I was of service. It just completely, that inner dimension of chaga, inner dimension of generosity, of giving up, offering up my service for the benefit of all the yogis. It completely shifted that. And I took that, actually, teaching to my life, to my work after that. So I'd like to pass this on to you, not just on your yogi job here. Start experimenting here, just to get it in your bones and see what it feels like. And then take it home. It's an inner dimension of generosity. Because you're doing whatever thing it is you're doing anyway, but if you do it with generosity, the generosity of heart, see how it changes your experience of it. It's not just a benefit to others, a benefit to yourself. See how your body, how your mind, how your experience changes, how it becomes alive for you. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, the practice of giving is universally recognized as one of the most basic human virtues, a quality that testifies to the depth of one's humanity and one's capacity for self-transcendence. And I appreciate that, because the practice of generosity is, as we've discussed, is really a practice of letting go, is a practice of being of benefit, it's a practice of wisdom. It's all the same. It has this capacity, it has this dimension of self-transcendence in it, because you're transcending yourself by offering up, by giving. So in that way, it connects with the goal of the path. It completely connects with the goal of the path. Because the goal of the path is freedom. It's letting go. It's freedom, is the destruction of greed, hate, and delusion. And cultivation of generosity directly debilitates greed and hate. It's exactly at the opposite end of greed, generosity. And it also debilitates hate, and hence allows the mind to eradicate delusion, confusion, grow wisdom. So the practice of generosity, it also can be complicated, and it's perfectly okay to sit with and be with that complication. Our motives for giving may not always be pure. While we're giving, our thoughts may not all be good and noble. We may give with selfish motives, expecting something in return, or hoping to be liked by the receiver, or hoping that they like our gift, wanting to be known as a generous person, etc., etc. And it's okay. It's really okay. We can't quite expect ourselves to be completely perfect in every case, as long as we are aware. We are aware of, oh, okay, look at that. Okay, there is some letting go, generosity, of course, the pure generosity. And there's a little bit of, oh, I want this person to really like me. I want them to like this gift, etc., etc. And it's perfectly okay to just see it instead of letting it go unseen. But seeing, because that seeing allows sense of honesty with ourselves instead of feeling bad about it. And it is human nature. And if the intentions are pure, great. And if they're kind of, you know, mixed, that's okay too, as long as we can see that and make peace with that and not beat ourselves up over it, but just see it and see the good in it. Still see the good in it. See the good in the action. In Buddhism, there are three types of giving. The first one is known as miserly giving, and is when we give something that we no longer need or want. And this kind of giving demands nothing of us. It's some kind of a recycling. But it's useful, but may not be in the highest category of generosity. And then the second level of generosity is termed kindly giving. And here we give what we would like to receive, and maybe we expect to be repaid in some form or another. So there is a thoughtfulness and friendliness in this kind of giving. But it also often doesn't really cost us anything. The third, and what is purported to be the highest form of giving, is known as kingly or queenly giving. And that is when we give the very best of what we have in our time, in our energy, in our material goods, in order to benefit others. So I offer that just for consideration. Again, not as a tool to beat yourself up. And whatever level of giving, I think that it's interesting that this teaching is available just for our own understanding, sort of so that we're honest with ourselves. And yet, I think there is goodness in any form of giving, Because chaga and dana always go together. So there is more, there is dana, there is more chaga, the more heart releases it's holding on to. So whatever it is, I wish there was another translation that I knew for miserly giving, I'll come up with it. Whether it's that, whether it's level one, level two, or level three, I think any form of giving still is giving. And I like this, there's in Anguttara Nikaya 357, I think the Buddha points to that actually. The Buddha points to that. To never underestimate the power of small gifts. And he says, even if a person throws the rinsings of a bowl or a cup into a village pool or pond, thinking, may whatever animals live here feed on this, that would be a source of merit. So obviously in that case, you know, it's leftovers of a food, right? Like crumbs, the crumbs that are being shared by the animals. Like, it's not the best piece of the food, right? It's not kingly, but at the same time, it's merit. It is wholesome. It is wholesome, and it's in this practice. So, I also wanted to share with you a little bit of a study, one study. A Nikki talk is never complete if some kind of a scientific study isn't shared. So here we go. So this is from an article from the Greater Good Science Center in Berkeley. The article appeared in December 2010. And the title of it was Five Ways Giving is Good for You. And And this we already know, but it's kind of interesting nevertheless. So this aspect of it, I'll just share one of them with you, not all five, but the subtitle here is Giving Makes Us Feel Happy. So in a 2008 study at the Harvard Business School, conducted by Norton and colleagues, they found that giving money to someone else lifted participants' happiness more than spending it on themselves, despite the participants' prediction that spending on themselves would make them happier. Isn't that interesting? So you come bring people into the lab and you ask them, so if you had this much money, and if you spend it, how happy do you think you would be if you spend it on yourself, if you went to the spa, got a massage, I don't know, whatever, or if you spend it on someone else? And people estimate, oh, I'll be happier if I, you know, do all these awesome things for myself. And guess what? They actually feel happier when they give the money to someone else. Their level of happiness when they spend it on, give it to others, they give it to others instead of spending it on themselves. They're happier. And the happiness expert, Sunya Liu, her name is always interesting for me to pronounce, Liubomirsky, she's a professor at University of California, Riverside. So she saw a similar results when she asked people to perform random acts of kindness each week for 6 weeks, that their level of happiness increased with these random acts of kindness. And it turns out that these good feelings are reflected in our biology. Another study by Moll and colleagues from NIH found that when people give to charities, it activates a region of a brain that's associated with pleasure, social connection, trust, and creating a warm glow effect. Some of you guys said connection, warmth, joy earlier, right? When you remembered your giving. Well, here it is, that part of your, I made that part of your brain light up 30 minutes ago. Giving to charity activates the regions of the brain associated with pleasure, social connection, trust, and creating a warm glow effect. Scientists also believe that altruistic behavior releases endorphins in the brain, producing the positive feeling known as the helper's high. That's the best kind of high. So, let me share a couple more. I found these actually in the suttas, and I think they're just beautiful. I want to share this with you. This one has to do when something is given. What isn't given is lost, and what is given isn't. It's an interesting, it's from Samyutta Nikaya 141. So when the world is on fire with aging and death, one should salvage one's wealth by giving. Isn't that interesting play on words? One should salvage one's wealth by giving. What's given is well salvaged. What's given bears fruit as pleasure. Ah, we just read about pleasure, right? What's given bears fruit as pleasure. What isn't given does not. Thieves take it away, or kings. It gets burned by fire or lost. I just love this way of one should salvage one's wealth by giving. What's given is well salvaged. Well salvaged. Here's another one from Dhammapada 223 about overcoming stinginess, miserliness. Conquer anger with lack of anger, bad with good, stinginess with a gift, a liar with truth. So if you actually notice, if the tendency of your heart is to to cling, is not to release. I think the best antidote for that is fake it till you become it. Give gifts, be generous as much as possible. Start with level one giving. Start with level one giving, level two, and then allow the heart to open to level three. Becomes a practice. Also, this reminds me, there's a teaching in Visuddhimagga about ways to overcome anger. And it's a long list of things to overcome anger. Try this and try that. And, you know, metta, loving kindness for yourself or that person, and blah, 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 blah. Just a lot of techniques. It's a lovely long list. The last item on the list is the person you're angry with, give him a gift. It's pretty amazing, actually. It works. It really works. I've tried it. It really works. Because there's something about giving a gift that's to someone you have conflict with, that it opens the heart. It opens the heart. You get to see that person. You get to see your relationship in a different light. It's energetic. You don't do it. So try that. Really try. It could be a small gift. But if you're angry at someone, in conflict with someone, give them a gift. So, another aspect of generosity, giving and receiving, is that we are both, actually I'm going to pause for a minute, so this is going to be silly, but play along with me for a moment if you would. So, has anyone ever given anything to anyone? Raise your hand if you've ever given anything. I know, just if you've ever given anything, okay. All right, thank you. All right, now raise your hand if you've ever received anything from anyone. Isn't that lovely? I mean, we're all, every single one of us, we are in the circle of giving and receiving in this life. We're not an island. We all give. We all receive. Surprise is just what we do as human beings. We give and we receive. And to me, it's just a wonderful dimension of realizing we are in this circle of giving and receiving, in this circle of life all the time. There's just no other way. It's just a part of what it is to be human, giving and receiving. Sharon Salzberg says, in an act of giving, we're aligning ourselves with certain values. We develop love, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. We let go of grasping, aversion, and delusion in a single act of giving. That's why the Buddha said that if we knew, as he did, the power of giving, we wouldn't let a single meal pass without sharing something. You can do it mentally if you don't actually hand something over to the other sitting, to the person sitting next to you, which might not be very wise. To create spaciousness all of the time, over and over again, is what giving is all about. It's interesting. There's actually a second part to this paragraph I want to share, but I want to diverge for a moment. And there's actually a in the kitchen downstairs, there is, I don't know, those of you who have yogi jobs, you might have seen this in the IRC kitchen. There's just a lovely little text on the fridge. And before this talk, I went and took a photo of it, and I wanted to share with you. So it has a similar theme. It's a paragraph from Sharon Salzberg. So it starts, thus the Buddha said, if we knew the power of giving, we would not let a meal pass without sharing some of it. And then it continues. Sharing food is a metaphor for all giving. When we offer someone food, we are not just giving that person something to eat. We are giving far more. We give strength, health, beauty, clarity of mind. and even life, because none of those things would be possible without food. So when we feed another, this is what we are offering, the substance of life itself. I love that when I saw that. It just makes me happy at IRC that is what the service leaders, the kitchen staff, or that's how all of us are being nourished. You're being given life. It just brings so much gratitude and joy in my heart. And also generosity. Generosity begets generosity. So I just wanted to share that with you. I was moved when I saw that. So now you can pass that and see that. So going back to the other aspect of it, the aspect of giving and receiving, food, nourishment, life itself. There's also an aspect of when giving and receiving, this lack of hierarchy, that borders disappearing. So let me share this paragraph and then I'll talk more about it. So Sharon says, if we give a gift with this kind of motivation, without attachment to a certain result, without expectation of what will come back to us, it's like a celebration. It's celebrating freedom within ourselves as a giver and also freedom within the receiver. I love that. Celebrating freedom within ourselves as a giver and also freedom within the receiver. In that moment, we're not relating to each other in terms of roles or differences. There is no hierarchy. In a moment of pure giving, we become one. We're not thinking, well, this person has a lot more than I do materially, and so what difference does it make if I give them something? We're not thinking, maybe they don't like me, here I am about to offer them something, and I feel really foolish. All of those thought patterns that might go on in a single interaction in our lives fall away in one moment of true giving. And I'm going to extend that, not just a moment of true giving, but also I think receiving is a practice. I think receiving graciously, receiving gracefully is a huge practice. Because sometimes people, in some cases, you know, we have trouble accepting generosity of others. It can bring up the opposite. It can bring up feeling of discomfort. It can bring up feeling of unworthiness. It can bring up feeling of, I don't deserve this, or maybe they expect something back, or just all kinds of, you know, the opposite. Instead of just graciously receiving with a smile. Because to me, when I accept a gift, when I accept a gift completely graciously and openly, and I've become a lot better at this, by the way, so it's from my personal practice as I've become older, I graciously receive, I accept the gift that's offered to me, which might be a compliment, might be a nice thing somebody says, or physical gift, etc., or their generosity, their time. If I completely accept it, I'm honoring their generosity. So in a way, I'm giving them a gift back. I'm giving them a gift back by being open, instead of blocking it. You know, blocking doesn't feel good, right? If I gave you a gift and like, no, like, ew, it just wouldn't feel good, right? Whereas if I gave you a gift and you just accepted, I would feel so much better. Just like if there's that sense of connection, there's that flow from my heart to your heart, from your heart to my heart. It just kind of like, ooh, keeps going. It's that circle of giving and receiving. I know for me, it's interesting, especially with compliments. I think I learned this a long time ago. And it might be kind of cultural. I've seen that in others too. Like, you know, there's this common thing when somebody says, oh, you're wearing something nice. And some people say, oh, this old thing, right? You kind of like demean it, like, oh, this is nothing. Whereas I've learned, I switched years ago. Like when somebody gives me a compliment, I receive it. And sometimes I found in the past there would be a movement to return the compliment right away. And now I don't. It's because I don't think that's the right time. If I really feel it, then it's okay. But it's not a knee-jerk reaction anymore. I'm just going to let that land. Oh, you're wearing a really nice shirt. Oh, thank you. Yeah, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. I want to give you something. I want to give you a little gift, a little sweet. Thank you. Even if I don't eat sugar that day, thank you. Right? Thank you so much. Thank you. Just accepting. It's just there's graciousness in accepting gracefully. So receive, let that connection, let the heart be open. The heart that is open then can, the heart that receives generosity can then respond with generosity, can be full and fill other people's cup. Another little piece of a sutta I want to share with you. And this is about how a person of integrity, which is all of us, a person of integrity gives a gift. These five are a person of integrity's gifts. Which five? A person of integrity gives a gift with a sense of conviction. A person, again, I'm going to pause here. And there's also something about, so sense of conviction. There is kind of the, you know, there's no diffidence. Like, oh, well, I think I'm going to give you this thing. I'm not quite so sure. But like a conviction, a sense of conviction, which also, by the way, comes in the body language of giving. It's so different if, you know, if somebody gives you a gift with two hands like this, and where they kind of like dangle a pen from their hand, like, oh, here, I have a pen for you, I have a gift. Doesn't it feel different? It feels really different. I actually became really tuned to this when I went to visit Burma about almost 10 years ago now. And in Burma, culturally, when you give something to someone, you either give it with in two hands, or if you give it with one hand, the right hand, you go to the right hand, and the left hand touches the right hand. It's kind of like, it's almost like two-handed, but kind of like abbreviated two-handed, right? And that really affected me, the way it just seemed gracious. Even if somebody was giving me a piece of paper or anything, or you know, they're making change for me, you know, at the store. Like this gesture, it's just gracious. It just, so I've started to do that, and it just feels good when I give something to someone, to give it wholeheartedly, with conviction, with both hands, and receive it with appreciation, with both hands. Even if they're giving it with one hand, they may not have been to Burma, but you know, just receive it in both, which is graciously. So back to this, to Anguttara Nikaya 5.148. I didn't give the reference before. So these five are a person of integrity's gifts. Which five? A person of integrity gives a gift with a sense of conviction. A person of integrity gives a gift attentively. I like that. That's also kind of similar. Attentively. You're not kind of looking here and there and everywhere, establishing eye contact, you're having your presence, you're attentive. A person of integrity gives a gift in season, in time, in season, the right time, in season, appropriately. A person of integrity gives a gift with an empathetic heart. Ah, I think that's, for me, that's the biggest thing here. It's the joy in the heart, it's the empathetic heart. It's taking delight and joy and empathy in the receiver's joy. There's a connection, there's a heart connection in the giving. In the same way that the offering of food, you know, feeding, as the piece I read, the offering from the heart, there is a empathetic heart connection in that offering of food, making meals. And the last one, a person of integrity gives a gift without adversely affecting himself or others. So a person of integrity gives a gift without adversely affecting themselves or others. And that's important too. And I think that comes to mind also with kingly or queenly giving, level 3, because you, in that case, you give the best you have without without adversely affecting yourself and others. So I'd like to end with another paragraph from Sharon. We practice generosity. To free others. It's actually, it's twofold before she talked. Well, maybe I'll read the whole thing. Okay, three paragraphs. All right. The aim of Dana is twofold. Or else it's an incomplete experience. The first aim of Dana is to free our minds from the conditioned forces that bind and limit us. Craving, clinging, and attachment bring confinement and lack of self-esteem. If we're always looking for some person or thing to complete us, we miss the degree to which we are complete in every moment. It's a bit like leaning on a mirage, only to find that it can't hold us. There is nothing there. When we are continually moved by looking for the next experience and the next pleasure, it's like going from one mirage to another. We have no security. Nothing is holding us up. We practice generosity to free the mind from that delusion, to weaken the forces of craving and clinging so we can find essential happiness. In the last paragraph, we also practice generosity to free others, to extend welfare and happiness to all beings, to somehow, as much as each of us can, lessen the suffering in this world. When our practice of generosity is genuine, when it's complete, realize inner spaciousness and peace. And we also learn to extend boundless caring to all living beings. To extend boundless caring to all living beings. Let's just sit with that. And let the words settle or be offered up. May the generosity of our hearts and minds serve as a cause and condition for the happiness, joy, peace, ease, and freedom of our hearts and all living beings everywhere. Thank you for the generosity of your attention and your presence.